Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the program, everybody. You're listening to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on Thursday, July 30th, 2020. I'm your host, Jackie Balestra. Thank you for tuning in. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and there is no better place to do just that. This segment of the South Bay Show is brought to you by Your Actualized Visions. A local advertising agency, Your Actualized Visions offers all your advertising needs under one roof. From logo design, business cards, banners, and signage, to online services such as website design, SEO management, promotional videos, reputation management, and loyalty promotions, you name it, and Your Actualized Visions will handle it for you on time and under budget. Built on the needs of their clients, Your Actualized Visions is competitively priced and economical, saving you money and greatly enhancing your bottom line. At Your Actualized Visions, customer service is all local with one point of contact. No more dealing with robo-answering machines, getting the runaround, or speaking to someone in another country. Your Actualized Visions understands your hyper-local advertising needs and focuses on bringing you real clients. They do not buy likes, followers, or fake results. Your campaigns are real, built with real community followers who want to purchase your services and products. The only thing standing in the way of your company's success is you now picking up the phone right now and calling Your Actualized Visions at 310-413-8773. To learn more about what Your Actualized Visions can do for you and your company, visit the website at youractualizedvisions.com. Your Actualized Visions, your dreams today, not someday. You can learn more about the show and listen to prior episodes on Facebook at facebook.com/TheSouthBayShow or on my website, southbaybyjackie.com. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose, that's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And joining me this morning is our co-host and producer, Deanne Chase, founder of Chase Law Group. For all your business law needs, visit the website at southbaybusinesslawyers.com. Good morning, Deanne. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Jackie. I'm doing great. Glad to be here. Another beautiful day in the South Bay.
Another beautiful day. You know, it's funny that you say that because I woke up and it was a, you know what I'm having right now? I'm having a hot cocoa because it was a hot cocoa Ooh. Kind of morning. It's a little foggy out there, at least at my house. It's a little foggy. It's very foggy. It's like pea soup. I can barely see a block away. So I treated myself to a hot cocoa with marshmallows and whipped cream.
Wow, that sounds very cozy. Very cozy. I don't know. I like the fog by the beach. It's a part of beach living that a lot of people don't think about when they think about living by the beach. So every time I see the fog, I always go, oh, I love living by the beach. I don't know. It's my thing, I guess.
I enjoy the fog too. I do as well. Like yesterday where I am, the sun never came out. It was just, we had June gloom all day long. But I do like for the sun to pop out at some point during the day. But yeah, I got up, I looked out the window, I figured it was a kind of morning. Now I gotta ask you, did the earthquake wake you up this morning?
Oh, I didn't realize we had an earthquake this morning. No, I'll say no.
Yeah, we had a 4.2 in the valley, and then there were a couple of 3-something aftershocks. So,
wow, did you feel it?
I didn't feel it. No, it didn't wake me up. I didn't feel it. My husband told me when he checked out his news this morning, he said, oh, we had an earthquake this morning. That and the fact that the GDP dropped by 1/3 in 1/4, it is now officially worse than the Depression. The Depression, wow. I think, took a lot longer than that. And what's really scary is that without the stimulus packages, the GDP would have dropped by 75%, which is all part and parcel kind of what we're going to discuss this morning with our guests. A lot going on. This pandemic is affecting every aspect of our lives, the economy, and our topic today. So we have a lot to talk about. So let's get to it. Who are our guests this morning, Deanne?
Well, this morning we have a couple of returning guests, two of my favorite people in the South Bay. We have Dave Salzman and Carol Glover They're South Bay Real Estate Investment Advisors. Carol is a real estate broker and real estate attorney, and Dave is the managing broker of Engle Volkers South Bay, LA, and an avid real estate investor. Together, they operate a development firm focusing on value-add investments in single families, offices, and multifamily. And their residential focus is in the beach cities. Their investment and renovation business casts a wider net. So Carol was raised in Manhattan Beach and stayed local, earning her BA at the University of California, Irvine, and her JD at Loyola Law School. Carol has traveled the world but never ceases to marvel at living in this beautiful beach community. Dave is originally from Scottsdale, Arizona, focusing on real estate at an early age and graduating magna cum laude in business administration, real estate finance from Arizona State. Dave came to LA working for IBM, found the beach cities, started his real estate career, and never looked back. So this morning we're going to be talking real estate in the wake of COVID-19, and there's no one better to talk about South Bay real estate than Dave and Carol.
Well, thank you,
welcome,
Dan.
Welcome, Dave. Welcome, Carol. Thanks for joining us again. You guys have been on the show before.
Here we have. Great to be back.
We're going to get into all the details with the two of you, as you are the local experts. And I just wanted to say, you know, what I've been reading and seeing, real estate looks a little nutty right now. I'm hearing about there's a lot of talk about people moving out of cities. I hear it from friends. I hear it on the news. Locally, on social media, I'm seeing rooms for rent, grandmother-in-law units, rooms, rental people are looking for tenants, I guess, because a lot of kids move back home. You know, kids in college, maybe just recently out in the workforce. A lot of our friends, their kids have been home since the beginning of this, whether they came home from school or they were working in another city. That's what I'm seeing. So who wants to start, Dave or Carol, on what I'm seeing locally?
There does seem to be a trend to move from urban areas to suburban areas, and I thought that's one of the topics I wanted to talk about, but I thought I'd talk about the underlying background impetus that's caused that trend, if you would like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That sounds great.
So in the housing market, both nationally and locally, the industry has put together an index called the Housing Market Recovery Index, and this is very enlightening. It shows what has happened over the course to housing demand and supply over the course of this pandemic. To create the index, they used four components as weights. One was housing demand as measured by the online search activity growth. One's the growth in asking prices of homes. This is asking prices, not sale prices. One's the number of new listings that are reaching the market, and another one is the pace of sales, which is how many days a property stay on the market. If you use the last week of January as 100, by the first part of March, we were already up to 106.5. In other words, 6.5% more activity than we had the last week in January. By May, it had dropped to 83. So at that point, we were down 23% from the high in the first part of March. That was the result of the collapse of the housing activity during the pandemic, with people removing homes from the market since they did not want parties entering, and also buyers just not buying, staying home too. So what we found out is that as we hit the bottom there in the first part of May, as an industry and as a buyer and seller population, we kind of figured out how to handle this. So an interesting component is that that index has moved up to 90 now as of the end of June. And it's on the way back up towards its baseline of 100. So we went through this very large depression in market activity from the middle of March to the first part of May, and now we're on a nice, really solid recovery from that. An example of that is pending home sales. which were well above the baseline average in February and into March, and then declined precipitously into April. But interestingly enough, in the May and June, the number of homes that are under contract has gone back to the normal numbers that we've seen historically. So
wow.
The background on this is we had a giant collapse.
Like yeah.
And we had a having a giant recovery.
I'm surprised. I would have thought that your percentage would have been a lot lower. I'm surprised that it was only, what'd you say, 23%?
Yeah, on that activity index, right? It went from 106.5 to 83.1 from the beginning of March to the beginning of May. That's just 2 months. So that's quite a bit of a downturn on what is historically a pretty stable volume. But the even more dramatic is the pending home sales, which means houses that are currently under contract, went from what would measure about 115% of the normal average rate in the beginning of March to more like 50% of the normal rate in April, and then back to 100 in May. So
what do you what do you think that reflects? Do you think people are a lot of people are moving out? Just a market recovery.
I think that it's just a market recovery from a significant blow that happened in an incredibly short period of time, and it was terribly intense. We all just lived through it. But the underlying financial, some people fear there may be a recession coming, or fear there may be a collapse in pricing of housing and so on, which I want to get to. But the fundamentals of the economy, unlike 2008 and prior downturns where we had an economically driven downturn, for example, the collapse of the financial system in 2008, in this case, the underlying economy has been extremely strong, and the reason for the decline in employment and production has nothing to do with the economy and everything to do with a pandemic disease. So we don't see any underlying fundamentals that say the economy has a problem. The economy has a COVID problem, but it doesn't have an economic problem. And that's reflected in what we're seeing now. Once people got past the shock of the shutdown and the whole world changed dramatically, and anytime there's a lot of uncertainty, people don't make decisions and they don't leave their house and so on, right?
Right.
But it can't stay that way forever. And soon people adapt to the new reality. The underlying economics are strong. Most of the unemployment has hit in lower wage jobs. And those lower wage jobs have been supported with this federal unemployment insurance plus the state unemployment insurance. Some people in those positions are making more money on unemployment than they were actually working. So far that's really mitigated the impact financially.
Dave, can I jump in?
Go ahead.
I think that there's strong economics, which is what Dave is talking about. But the other factor is a real human factor here, in that people who have been renters or people who have been in smaller homes, this shift has really caused people to think, I believe, more intensely about their housing, where they are. Do they have enough room? If I'm a renter, do I want to be a first-time home buyer? Dave will speak more to this, but really the strength of a lot of this is in the first-time home buyer market. Interest rates are incredibly low. And if you're living in an apartment, or you're living in a perhaps a condominium complex and you don't have the exterior space or you don't have the room for both people to work at home, there's just been a kind of an emotional and practical shift towards looking towards home buying and shifting the size and location of your home. And that's also driven. Plus, some people are making the decision, you know what? Maybe I'm close to retirement. Maybe now is the time to sell my place and move out of state. So there's a lot of, I think, economic strength, but also some just basic emotional factors that COVID has kind of coalesced.
Yeah, that's
it's,
true.
You know,
we're seeing – go ahead.
Especially well, people ahead, spending more time at home. That makes a lot of sense, actually. Very intuitive to think about. Yeah, it's true to say we've been spending a lot more time at home and a lot more time, you know, in close proximity to our loved ones. So that makes sense. You start to see the deficiency in your living conditions and say you want to make a change.
Right. This is especially true in really heavily urbanized environments. Our daughter lives in New York City and actually Brooklyn, but the impetus in New York, the New York area, has been a dramatic increase in the listing of urban properties, homes for sale, and a tremendous demand for suburban New Jersey, Connecticut, upstate New York, because the concentration and get a little more elbow room, and two, it's become we've made the forced transition as a nation to a much more work from home environment, whether we like it or not. And in many cases, it's actually working out pretty well. So that's causing people to focus on their living environment much more than they used to. Here locally, our entry-level market is about $1.5 million purchase price and down. And in that price range, we're seeing, every property that comes on the market that's priced right is getting to 8-10. We had one with 21 offers. They're selling instantaneously with multiple offers. So the market activity in the entry-level market in our world is just stunningly high. And as time goes on, that action is moving up the price scale. It hasn't hit the higher-end market yet, but it's on the way. And that lower-end entry-level market is being driven by these phenomenally low interest rates that allow you to afford to buy, and especially as compared to rent.
Well, and here in the South Bay, I mean, we have had a pretty strong real estate market in any event. I mean, we've always been in a better position, I think, because of, supply and demand, right, here in the South Bay. Are you finding a lot of those lower-end entry-level properties here in the South Bay?
No. In fact, that's part of the problem is that we're significantly undersupplied of available real estate homes, especially in the what for our world is the entry-level price range, which for other worlds is a pretty high price range. But there's nowhere near enough supply, and there is way more demand than I think perhaps I've ever seen. Some people out there we talked to many buyers that, and some of whom say, oh, I'm going to wait until the market collapses, basically, and prices go down. That's certainly not what we're seeing. And some people have predicted a new round of foreclosures like we had in 2008. That's also absolutely not what we're seeing. And there's two reasons that we won't see foreclosure activity go up. In fact, it may even go down. And one of them is the legal forbearance rules that were put into place. You can legally ask your lender to forbear your mortgage payments for up to as much as 360 days, a full year. So that's causing people to not be foreclosed out if they are in trouble. And the other reason that we're not going to see foreclosures is this time around we have substantial market value equities. 77% of people who went into forbearance have more than 20% equity in their home. Some of them, 60%, have more than 30% or a third. Only 1% have a negative equity. In 2007, 2008, and 2009, a giant share of the homeowners had negative equity because of a collapse in prices. We're seeing a rise in prices, not a collapse. So the whole idea that the weight for the market to collapse and buy at the bottom seems to be not borne out by the facts on the ground this time around.
That's, that's so interesting, but everything that you and Carol just said, it makes sense. It was the initial shock. It was like the shock wave, the stock market dumped, everybody stayed home. We weren't spending any money. And as you said, the real estate market came down. There wasn't a lot of activity. But now we're into it. This is week 29 of the pandemic. And now that the initial shock has worn off, it makes sense. But what you're basically saying it comes down to is quality of life. If you are living in an apartment or a condo and you don't have any outdoor space or you don't have enough room for a couple of people to be working from home, that makes absolute sense. I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking you know, prices are going to come down and then people are going to start buying when prices come down. But you're saying just the opposite. Now that I listen to this, that makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. Which is,
yeah, it does.
Now this is this is interesting because it was last year my husband and I were actually looking at purchasing one of those Sprinter vans. It's like a mini RV. And they've got, it's fully loaded, you know, everything that a decent sized RV would have, these Sprinter vans have. And we started looking at them last year. And now you cannot buy one for your life.
Really?
They are sold out. Oh, they're sold out, that you can't get your hands on one. And now I'm thinking, all right, well, everybody ran out and bought those because they wanted to be able to be mobile, get out of the house and stuff. I mean, it's absolutely because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But now I'm thinking, as soon as we saw this, I was like, okay, well, let's give it 6 months and a bunch of people are going to be unloading them instead of buying a brand new one. We'll get a used one.
Absolutely. People are doing road tripping and, you know, getting out of their houses and trying to do it in the safest way possible.
Yeah. Without flying.
Yeah.
You know, the flying vacations are
way
back. Right.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, Carol, what do we need to know now about buying and selling a property now?
Well, in terms of buying and selling now, can you hear me okay? In terms of buying and selling a property now, there's just the buyers and sellers have to know that it is a different world and there's a lot of new protocols that have to be followed. And the Realtor Association, in conjunction with following the health department, have really come up with a lot of protocols in terms of, you know, masking. You have to have permission and you have to have a release for entering the property. You have to have demonstrated to a realtor, if you're a buyer, that you've looked at the property online, that this is a community that is appealing to you, that you've looked at the walkthrough video of the home and the pictures, and this is something that you're really serious about and are interested in. And with thankfully with the technology, we are able to do this so much easier than we would have a couple of years ago. The apps that are available that allow you to essentially view a home from your home are tremendous. But the protocol is a little more complicated than it used to be. And sellers need to know that also, sellers want to know that they're protected, that the people that come in the house are wearing their booties and their gloves and their masks and they're not touching everything. And then it's up to the realtor that's showing the home upon anybody's departure that they thoroughly wipe it down, make sure they observe what was touched, and that it's clean before those people leave and anybody else is allowed in. So that's the new normal in terms of viewing and the homes. And it's, you know, it's a little more paperwork, but you know what? Safety is critical and it allows the buyers and sellers to be comfortable.
It comes down to escrow deployments. That's all.
Yeah, and you get rid of all those looky-loos in the process. You know, you no longer have the neighbors coming through to see what's up for sale on the block, right?
No, that's right. And our showing volume dropped dramatically, but the quality of the actual showings is significantly higher because there is such a new protocol barrier to making it easy. For example, there's no open houses anymore. We don't even have brokers.
Right.
Opens. Everything is by appointment only. And limited to the realtor doing the showing and no more than two adults, no more bringing the kids, no more bringing Uncle Joe, anything like that. It's all designed to sort out the real buyer for any one property from everybody else.
Wow. Yeah. No open houses, no broker open houses. So how is that working? If brokers, in addition to home buyers, have to make an appointment to come in and see the properties, huh?
Yes. Yep.
But I guess they're just relying more on the online viewings, right?
It doesn't work as well from a know your inventory point of view. Okay. because, you know, it's been a long, long, long tradition of, at least in Manhattan Hermosa, every Friday and in Redondo every Thursday at lunch, we would go tour the new properties on the market. So as a result, if you were active, you would know, and I saw that one Thursday, type of thing, right? No more.
No more.
Maintaining the inventory or knowledge of the inventory has become more and more challenging. You have to do it by a conversation with other realtors. There is a service that goes in videos, the new properties. Everybody, all the agents now are using video walkthroughs. So it's become much more, you know, on remote pilot than it was.
You know what we're calling this? You know what we're calling this? Deanne, do you remember the term we're using for the situation we find ourselves in? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
It's my new favorite term. It's a forced digital transition. Forced digital transition is what we're in.
Right.
And it's
effective. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, too, about how, I mean, we're seeing it in so many different areas, in real estate in particular here, about just this pandemic has forced us to, you know, be innovative and use technology. I think it's advanced a lot of the use of technology in a lot of different ways that people would not otherwise have kind of delved into, you know. There's like the barriers to entry for a lot of people, but now people have no choice.
Plus, I find it interesting that it wasn't more than probably, I don't know, 6 months ago. I remember being invited by a client to a FaceTime or one of the other, you know, popular ones. Let's get FaceTime this conference. And I remember thinking, okay, but in the back of my mind, it was, okay, really? But now with you know, it's every day and four or five times a day that you just don't think twice about jumping on and having a face-to-face meeting with somebody online, you know? And it really is a huge shift, So, and it's provided a lot of access that is just amazing that wasn't available before. So, good things.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hope it continues even as the market opens up, because in a lot of ways it's also created a lot more efficiencies with being able to have instant access to face-to-face communication, basically, instead of, you know, checking calendars and, you know, getting in your car and, you know, driving to a coffee spot or whatever. You know, it can be more efficient in a lot of ways, but I don't know about you guys, but I'm really kind of missing that personal contact.
I think everybody is.
Think
about your own situation and what that has done. You've undoubtedly set up something in your home where you can do video conferencing and Zoom calls and so on and so on. And basically so has every other information or knowledge-based worker in the United States. You multiply that times, I don't know, at least half the population. It's a tremendous sea change in the way that we utilize our homes. And that sea change is causing even new construction builders to begin to shift from the open floor plans that we've all loved to more closed floor plans to give people privacy, give you a private office with a closable door, that sort of thing. I mean, it's actually already changing the way the floor plans of new construction homes to meet what is anticipated to be a different style of demand in the future than we had in the past.
Wow, that's
fascinating. I never thought of that.
Dave.
You know, it's so funny because I am an HGTV junkie, and in this day and age, like the news, at some point you just have to turn it off. You cannot listen to it anymore. And I turn on HGTV, and you know I'll be working. I can listen to it, and I just run out for the reveal. You know, I run outside to actually see the reveal. And it's so funny because. Home decor has changed so much over the years. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, it was tile countertops. Now, and then it was granite for about a decade, and now they're getting into other stuff. And the whole open concept thing has just been everywhere. And to myself, I thought, I wonder if this will ever go out of style. And yeah, it probably will.
Apparently sooner rather than later, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see the increase in not only the more, maybe the multiple home office spaces, but also the increase, again, in technology. I mean, we need, a lot of people are thinking, you know what, I do a lot more video. I do podcasts now. And so I think our home, instead of home theater or in addition to home theater, I think we're going to have much more intensified home office working environments that can accommodate your Zoom room, your podcast, and doing those things. It also, just I want to briefly segue into the commercial market, which is where I spend most of my working days, is in the commercial market. The interesting thing also is the shift in thought from the high-rise urban office space, and it's a couple of prongs. One, do I even need this much office space? And then the other prong is, Even though I have been working at home, I kind of need my separate think space. I need to be away from the kids and the dogs and the noise and the temptation to go, you know, raid the refrigerator. And I need an office, because people are, to Deanne's point, people are missing the contact. They're missing the collaboration. And even though we have technological ability to put the yearning factor on camaraderie is very high. I listened to a webinar the other day that talked about a poll that they had taken, and it was overwhelming, like 60-70% of the business owners polled. The reason they wanted to get back in the office was not just to be in an office, but they missed their people. So what we're also seeing is,
you know,
do I need as much space, but also a shift to maybe suburban offices really gained a tremendous interest in the marketplace, shifting from the large high rise to suburban office, which is drive up office, and but you still have a place to collaborate. Go ahead, DM. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I think that this topic personally to me is fascinating, but we're at the bottom of the hour, and I was wondering if I'd like to delve more into the commercial aspect of things. But Jackie, do we need to take a break?
Yes, we do. Very good timing. I'm your host, Jackie Balestra, and you're listening to The South Bay Show, a hyperlocal podcast that airs every Thursday and Friday morning at 8 a.m. on Blog Talk Radio. The show features the many fabulous things to do, places to go, and people to know in our South Bay. From El Segundo to the Palos Verdes Peninsula, we covered it all. So be sure to tune in each week to keep up with what's going down in our beachside bubble. Now, this morning, we're speaking with Dave Salzman and Carol Glover, South Bay Real Estate Investment Advisors, and it's all about real estate this morning. Carol, let's discuss commercial. Let's continue with the commercial discussion. What are we seeing there? What you had just started on before the break.
Yeah, I think
we're talking about
camaraderie.
Yeah.
Okay.
The camaraderie, and also the drive time. People have realized it's a couple prongs. They don't need the space, as much space. They are, even if they keep their same space, they need more space. So as an example, if you have an office that houses 20 people, and the problem with social distancing in the office means that at any one point in time, you can probably only have 10. And so do you go out as an owner and rent twice the space so you can house all 20 people in new expanded office space? Some people are making that decision. Do you rotate? There's a lot of split shifting going on, working in teams, and then also revamping the office so that is a safer place to operate with the distancing. So those considerations for the commercial office tenant are going on daily. And then there's the issue of, maybe I don't want to be in downtown Los Angeles or Century City anymore. Speaking of our South Bay people, maybe it's better that I move and shift to a more suburban or local, hyper-local office space that's drive-up, and my team of 10 can rotate through this smaller office space. So there's a lot of renegotiations on leases right now. A lot of leases are not being renewed. And while our home and the residential market is accelerating, I think in the near future, and currently we're seeing a lot of renegotiations, and I just think there's going to be a big shift in the urban office, and of course retail. Retail's going through a big shift as well.
I was interested in how our commercial tenants, our business owners, and these commercial leases are doing in light of the economy and our landlords, you know, open. You said a lot of renegotiations are going on, but are landlords open to these renegotiations, and how are the rules that prevented evictions, you know, coming into play?
Well, a couple things. On just evictions generally, the eviction moratorium was through the end of July. The governor extended it through September 30th, and it was an extension. The extension from the governor is an extension that says you, local cities and counties, are free to extend this mandate. It allows the local governments to make the extension if they want. So as an example, the LA County supervisors just approved the eviction moratorium. It's now through September 30th. Now, so that applies to LA County, unincorporated, and of course LA City. Now, what it doesn't apply to is those local governments who have their own moratorium. So there are some that have not shifted over and not extended. And if you are, you really, it's back to square one in terms of when this first happened, we got calls just daily. What applies to me? Where do I, am I in the, that eviction moratorium, or does it apply to me? Mm-hmm. And really it's a, you have to look at the government, the state that says through September 30th, and really have to look at your local eviction moratorium. So those are in place, and they're still in place through September 30th. Now, the foreclosure moratorium are a little bit different. The foreclosure moratorium really applied to on a federal level and a state level. There's been no forcing of private lenders to stop foreclosures. That's been, it's only been applied to Fannie and Freddie backed. So if you own an office building or you own an apartment building and you have a private, you know, an institutional lender who holds your mortgage, that's always been throughout this, a private negotiation on forbearance with those lenders, and those negotiations are still going on. And there is a tremendous amount of forbearance negotiation that has gone on between owners and lenders, and then also landlords and tenants, and that hasn't stopped. That's still going on.
Wow. Let me ask you about a co-work space, because prior to this, co-work space was booming. What has the pandemic done to that?
Well, I think initially that space took a huge hit, like everything else. But now they have these co-work space have put in protocols as well. Much like anything else, it's the number of people in the facility. Clearly, you have to make appointments, and they've had to change how they do things. Common area amenities are eliminated or substantially diminished. As an example, you know, the old grab a cup of coffee and the water cooler, a lot of those have been eliminated for safety reasons. And then just a lot of practicalities on spacing, barriers, sanitation, those are all in place.
Well, you know, I keep going back to what we discussed earlier about how this is changing everything, because prior to COVID, you know, most companies were very hesitant to allow people to work from home. Now, with the forced digital transition we're experiencing, they see that it can work. In most cases, it's working. So going back to, do I need to lease all of this space? Can I cut it in half? Can we go on a, you know, half the people are in the office 1 week, half the people are in the office the other week? It's just going to be very interesting. But I want to ask all of you, Deanne, Carol, Dave, I want to ask you something, because this is what my husband and I are experiencing. We literally are on Zoom calls all day long. And what's happening is by 5 o'clock, end of work day, we're still working because of all the stuff we didn't get done being on the Zoom calls and phone calls all day. We're still working several hours into the evening. Is that happening with any of you?
Definitely. Of course, as a real estate broker, you don't work regular 40-hour week. But it's become even more, shall we say, prevalent that evening direct work drags on into the evening. And for exactly that reason, I actually, because of the ease of technology of doing Zoom meetings, I actually have more meetings now than I used to when they were live. So it does have a productivity impact in two ways, positively and negatively, but ultimately it stretches out the workday for me anyway.
Well, yeah, I read a report that they said people on average are working an additional 2 hours a day, but that also has something to do with the commute. People aren't commuting 40 minutes to their office and 40 minutes or an hour home. So instead of doing all that commuting, they're working from home. So work days have gotten longer. But before we run out of time, we wanted to discuss a couple of ballot measures.
Right.
Who wants to take that?
Carol's going to take that.
I'm the lead off on that. So there are three that relate to real property in the state, and I'm going to race through these quickly, and then depending on how much time, we'll discuss more detail.
We have 15 minutes. Take your time. We have 15 minutes.
Okay. All right. So in number order, Proposition 15. Now, Proposition 15 is called the commercial tax on commercial and industrial properties for education and local government funding initiative. What that means is this is Prop 13. So when you think of Prop 15, it's really Prop 13. Prop 13 was, as many people know, was a constitutional amendment that was put in place. It was the Howard Jarvis movement that stayed the increase in property taxes on California properties. Rate was established at the time that you purchased the property, or what it was at the time you owned it when this was enacted, and then it was subject to essentially a 2% increase every year by the assessor's office on property taxes. So what this measure proposes to do is split the role. It's called the split role. And that would mean that that properties such as any commercial property, retail centers, office buildings, any commercial use of a property other than commercial agriculture would be subject to immediate reassessment up to market value. Now,
that's scary.
Yeah,
for the landowners.
The proponents of this say that this is going to help education. This is the way it's being, reviewed. Local government.
Oh, that's
it's
what
the,
they
the
always
title.
Say. That's what they, Carol. That's what they always say. It's for the children. They say that every time they want to give us a new tax, and we all know it doesn't go to it. It's not getting to the kids.
Well,
we know that.
I just read an article this morning that talked about it and said the ballot initiative would create a process where it would distribute the revenue, received from the commercial and industrial properties, and it goes to other areas other than the general fund. And it said first the revenue would be distributed to the state for supplement decreases from personal income tax and corporate tax. So it's a supplement to pick up on the loss of income tax and corporate tax. It would be go to the counties to cover the cost of implementing the measure. Then 60% of the remaining funds would be distributed to local governments and special districts. And then 40% would be distributed to school districts. So it's 40% to schools of the remaining after they've reimbursed all these other things. So take a look at the measure. My concerns, of course, as and full disclosure, I am a commercial property owner, so I obviously have my bias here. But the chambers of commerce are not in favor of this. What happens is, if you're not aware, many landlords have triple net leases on their property. And what that means is that the tenants pay a rental price plus they pay a percentage of common area expenses, which includes insurance, taxes, and maintenance on the property. So what will happen, unless it's the leases are renegotiated, is an increase in the tax basis, the property tax rate on a commercial property will get passed through to a tenant. Now, and that could be many properties are legacy properties, and they've been owned for a very, very long time. It could be a huge increase. And there's a lot of concern at the business, retail and tenant level, and also the office tenant level, as to what that would mean to them in terms of increases on top of a tough economic situation and their regular rent. So that's Prop 15 called the split roll.
I'm curious as to how they're going to word that ballot measure, because they got tricky with the last gas tax one. Nobody knew what they were voting for an additional 12 cent per gallon gas tax, and I think it was an increase in registration fees, and people voted for it. They had no idea what they were voting for. So I'm sure that this ballot measure is going to try and get tricky with it. Landlord's not going to end up paying it. The tenants are going to end up paying it. And by the way, I have money too, Carol.
And that means customers.
I'm biased against any tax increase. So we're allowed to have our biases. but yeah, you're right. It's going to go to the tenant and then from the tenant to the customers. You're absolutely right. So they're sticking it to us again. Sorry. Continue.
Continue.
Well, it's called Prop 15, and it does say, the title on it is Commercial and Industrial Properties for Education and Local Government. So they don't.
Wow,
there's
tricky.
Nowhere mentioned in the title that we're going to – it's going to be – it doesn't say repeal of Prop 13 for commercial properties. That's not what the title says.
That's what it should say.
Yeah.
That's what it should say.
Got to read between the lines. Yeah. So the next one is Proposition 19, and this one's a mixed bag in terms of what it does and does not. And Dave, I'll have you type in on this one also. So what happens in California now, also on your property taxes, is you get to quote unquote retirement age, and this is defined in there as anybody. Anybody 55 or older, you don't have to be retired, but it was originally intended for those who were retiring, easing back on life. They wanted to maybe move out of the family home and, go buy a small condo on a golf resort. And what happened was they would have this very, very low tax base because they bought the property when the kiddies were little. And subject to this 2%, it only increased incrementally over the years. And then they go and sell and go buy the golf course, and their property tax bill would boost up, right? So what was put in place was Prop 60, which said, okay, if you're over 55 or you're disabled or a veteran, you can one time in your life, and if you're a married couple, you get a one shot at this. You can go buy another property for less value than you sell for your current home, so a lower valued property, and you can take your very low property tax base with you. It became portable. It was portable, but it was portable on a county by county basis. Like if I wanted to take this to Orange County, I could do it. But if I wanted to go to another county that didn't have reciprocity, I couldn't do it. So it was a county by county measure. So what this moves fast forward. So what this ballot measure does is it allows a person 55 or older, or again, you know, veterans and disabled, to take your lower property tax basis with you to another property that could be more valuable, but you only get the benefit you have to pay the difference. So if my property is worth $500,000 and I go buy a $1 million property and I'm paying taxes on a $500,000 home, I don't get to take that to my million. I get to port over my $500,000 worth, but then the other $500,000 would be taxed at fair market value. So you get kind of a blended tax schedule if you buy a more expensive home. The other thing was it was a one-time shot. You really had to make your move and make it count, right? And now you get up to three times to do it. And then two, it's the measure says it's statewide, so you don't have to have this pick and choose. Well, can I go to that county? I don't know, maybe not. So this is statewide. You can move this anywhere in the state.
Oh, that sounds great.
that
sounds like a good deal.
Is it misleading? There's a lot of positives on this, the problem with this one is what they are also included is if you inherit a property, it used to be when you inherited mom and dad's property, you could do a parent and child exclusion, right? And you could you could turn that into a rental property and you still had this really low property tax base. This also says, you know, the proposition giveth and taketh, right? So this proposition says if you want to transfer that low tax basis, you can only do it if you're going to live in that property. So there's no more portability for this if you don't, you're not a resident in the property that you inherit. And that's going to be a big one. Dave, did you have any more on that one?
Yeah, the thought there, one of the reasons, it sounds like it might be a giveaway to older property owners, but in fact, when you had to decide, as you know, we've got this incredibly low property tax basis on your giant home that you don't need anymore, and you really should buy that condo on the golf course, but you don't because you couldn't pass your property tax. It's just your costs skyrocket, even though you stepped down on value, so people didn't sell. So we have empty nesters in these giant family homes that really should be sold to people who can use the space, but they never sell because they can't get over this financial damage component. This will, the original ability to sell once at 55, and once expanded into three times, will give us a great opportunity to free up inventory in high demand areas and allow seniors to move to much less intensive uses, like condos you can lock and leave, that sort of thing. So it's going to free up inventory quite a bit and substantially improve liquidity in our marketplace. That's the good news. The bad news, it is going to reduce the ability to keep low property taxes on properties that are ultimately rented. So is it trade-off worth it? Probably.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so we have one more ballot measure to talk about.
Rent control, more rent control. So California Proposition 21, Local Rent Control Initiative. This one gets a little more complex, but the bottom line is that it intensifies the rent control was just passed statewide in January of this year. This one puts another layer on it. There are some properties that are currently exempt from rent control increases, but this would say that the only properties that are exempt from rent control in the state of California are those that have been occupied within the last 15 years. So none of the older properties that still fell within the exemptions for rent control, that would be gone. It's only newer properties that are exempt from rent control. And that is to foster new construction. So new construction, you have, you avoid rent control on your newer properties for 15 years. Now, the other thing there is that it puts a, let me just read this. The ballot measure would allow local governments to adopt rent control on housing units, except on housing that was occupied within the last 15 years or units owned by natural persons who own no more than two housing units with separate titles, such as single-family condos, some duplexes, subdivided interests, et cetera. So what the rent control in January said is if you have a condo and it's owned individually, not by a corporation with multiple parties, and you or you own a single-family home, those are exempt from the rent control that went in January. What this says is, not so fast. If you own more than two housing units, regardless of whether it's a condo or a house, it's now subject to local rent control. So that is a further layer on rent control and a restriction on those properties that are currently exempt. So, I'm not a favor of this one at all. I think statewide rent control was a huge shift from what we've had ever before, because rent control has always been regulated at a local level. We now have statewide rent control, and this is a further restriction. And I honestly think it's tough. It, unfortunately, my personal opinion is it restricts development of more housing, and oh my gosh, we need housing, and so we need more development of housing and not more restrictive measures. That's my two cents. So that's Proposition 21.
Well, that was more than 2 cents. That was a couple of dollars, Carol. That was a couple of dollars. No, thank you for bringing us up to speed on that. And when these ballot measures come up, I really hope you and Dave will come back on and tell us which way to vote for them once they're worded, because they can be very, very confusing. So please keep that in mind. Tell us where to go when it's time. All right. So can Dave give us your contact information, website, email, whatever
sure.
you want to give out, so anybody that needs some real estate advice, they know where to go.
Okay. Cell is 310-871-5314, and cell or email address is my name, which is Dave at Dave Salzman, SALZMAN.com. And so we enjoy being on the show. We certainly look forward to doing it again. I know we got like 2 minutes left. I had about a couple of sentences on what the back half of 2020 might look like for real estate.
Okay.
And the bottom line is that most of the powers that be were predicting a very slow third quarter. Now, most of the powers that be are predicting that we'll not only recover, because certainly we have in the second quarter here, but it's going to continue to roll forward in the third and fourth quarters. So that's the prognosis for the back half of this year is very positive.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Our guests today have been Dave Salzman and Carol Glover, South Bay Real Estate Investment Advisors. Is there a website, Dave?
Well, and also we need Carol's contact information.
Yeah, we need Carol's information as well.
Oh, Carol.
The website is
DaveSalzman.com. Yeah, Dave is DaveSalzman.com. And I wear two hats, so I'm actually of counsel with Deanne and her firm, Chase Law Group. You can always find me at Chase Law Group on Deanne's website. And then I'm also a broker, and you can find me on DaveSalzman.com as well. And my cell phone, if anybody wants it, happy to take a call, is 310-999-9195.
A lot of nines.
Yeah.
A lot of nines. All right.
Thank you,
Dave
guys.
Dave Salzman and Carol Glover, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on all things real estate this morning. And Deanne, thank you so much. And thank you so much for stepping up and doing this for the summer. I'm really glad that you're with me and you're doing a fantastic job. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jackie.
Right.
It's been
Thanks
fun.
Thanks much. All right.
Thank you.
All right,
thank
everybody. That's our show. That's our show. Thank
Bye-bye.
You for joining us. And be sure to tune in tomorrow morning for Manhattan Beach Chamber 360. Bye-bye now.
Bye.